It's the Good Glow podcast with Spencer Matthews. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you by Dove's Advanced Care Body Wash. If you're looking for that extra step in your self-care routine that goes a long way, this is it. Dove's Advanced Care Body Wash is powered by 24-hour renewing micro-moisture technology, which means it doesn't just clean your skin, it actually nourishes it too. Millions of tiny moisturizing droplets get to work as soon as you step into the shower, and even better, keep working hours after you step out. So if you're ready to treat your skin to something truly nourishing, Dove Advanced Care Body Wash is available nationwide. Trust me, your skin will thank you. So today I chat to Spencer Matthews, who probably needs no introduction. He went from being a playboy on Made in Chelsea to the doting husband of one of our faves, Vogue Williams. He's lovable, kind and funny. It comes across so much on this podcast. His enthusiasm and his excitement for life is absolutely contagious. After the recording, I went out and I ran my fastest 5K in years. I couldn't believe it. But Spencer's energy just sweeps you up and leaves you inspired and motivated. Next month, Spencer will take on Project 7. He's attempting to do 7 Ironman triathlons on all 7 continents in 23 days. That's an almost 4-kilometer swim, a 180-kilometer cycle, and a full marathon all in one day. He's going to do that 7 times in 7 continents in 23 days. And with that comes the travel, 115 hours in the air, not to mention the airport queues, different time zones, and without any home comforts. The goal is to beat the current world record by nearly 4 years. And the cherry on top, one of these Ironmans will be in the Antarctica. But these challenges go so much deeper than ego and social praise for Spencer. These challenges bring him to a space where he connects with himself on a deeper level, with his brother Mike, who lost his life on Mount Everest when he was just 22. The years Spencer lost to alcohol, the shame he carried, and the self-doubt that once held him back. Today, Spencer gets emotional as he catches a little glimpse of a picture of his daughter as we chat. He lets us behind the curtain and in on those deeper chats with Vogue, a phone call from Jamie Lang, and how we too can step out of our comfort zones. Now, speaking of comfort zones, if you are ready to step out of yours, join us for the September Reset. It starts tomorrow or any day in September, a 10-day challenge to put you on a better path for the rest of the year. This is a chance to push yourself, to focus on what you really want and let go of what you don't. I'll leave a link in the show notes. It's been a few years since I was chatting to you, and I have a run club, and every time I go out and run with people, everyone talks about you and the podcast we recorded. So everyone's going to get a big surprise on Sunday when I've revealed that my latest guest is Spencer Matthews. How are you?
I'm very well. I've not felt better, I don't think. Things are great. Thanks for asking.
That's so good. Obviously, in Ireland, we are so invested in your journey and Vogue and everything you guys are doing. But I have to say, when you announced your latest challenge, I think there was a collective gasp. Tell us about it. We're so excited for you.
Well, thanks very much. That's very kind. Yeah, for me, it's just I wanted a different challenge next that didn't focus solely on running. Plenty of that last year. And just wanted to challenge myself in a different way physically. And I've always loved the idea of triathlons. And, you know, I think we've spoken before, as you know, but I very proudly follow in the footsteps of my brothers. And James became an Ironman when I was kind of in my, you know, turbulent drinking phase. And I can remember being, you know, finding all of that side of sport really enthralling. I've never done one myself. But when I came out of the desert with a completely new take on what's possible and where we set our parameters, I thought, wouldn't it be fun to explore Ironman distance triathlons, and wouldn't it be great to try and incorporate it into a kind of global series that doesn't exist currently. And yeah, so long story short, I'm doing a full distance triathlon, full Ironman distance One in every continent of the world. There are seven continents, and I'm trying to get that done in 21, 22 days. So it's about as fast as we can be going, including all of the travel. We're going to be in the air for, I think it's 115 hours total in a plane, which is going to be a massive part of the challenge in itself, logistical hell. But if everything goes according to plan, and if we remain on track, I should do it in 22 days. And if that's the case, I will beat the current world record by 3 years and 11 months.
Wow. Where do you get these ideas from, Spencer? And when you get an idea like this, do you keep it to yourself for a certain amount of time before you say it out loud? You can't hear me. I'm gone.
Like we can supposedly send rockets to Mars, but AirPods won't work with my iPhone. Like,
yeah.
The amount of times I'm in the middle of a conversation or like mid flow and like my AirPods disconnect from my iPhone, it's a few things frustrate me more than that. It's literally like, it's bizarre. Anyway, all good.
Oh, okay. So when you get an idea like this, do you keep it to yourself before you say it out loud, or are you the type of person that you have to say it straight away?
I'm a bit of a shocker when it comes to secrets, to be honest. I can't really. I do talk about it pretty much straight away. Not on like a mass scale. So like I wouldn't post about it or anything like that until it's a firmer thing that I'm sure that we're going to do. But no, like, I'll call Chris Taylor straight away. He's my guy from the 30 and 30 effort. He's also organizing this. He'll be with me every step of the way. We're pretty close now. No, I'll call him and bounce stuff off him. I don't know where the ideas come from, to be honest. I'm inspired by other events globally and other people who, in my opinion, are incredible, who push themselves beyond what would be perceived to be normal. And then I kind of try and elaborate on bits and bobs that already exist. For example, there's a marathon series that does a marathon in every continent. So seven marathons, they do that in 7 days because they have the time to do that, because a marathon obviously only takes between, you know, call it 2.5 and, you know, 3.5, 4 hours for these people. I don't know how many people run a sub-3-hour marathon who do this particular challenge, but my point is it's achieved relatively quickly, and then you can go back to the airport and move continent on the same day.
Yeah.
Whereas an Ironman, as I'm sure you know, takes between 11 and 15 hours.
And the fact that you've never done an Ironman before.
Yeah. I enjoy that side of the challenge, though, to be honest.
Yeah.
I found that I was so prepared. And I'm not saying I'm not prepared for this. I'm very physically fit. I'm very mentally prepared. Very confident in my ability to deliver the plan. But there are big question marks in this one. You know, I've never cycled 180 kilometers, for example. And so to do it seven times coming up as just a part of the challenge is going to be testing. I'm not a great swimmer, but by any stretch of the imagination, but I really enjoyed swimming, by the way. I've never thought I would see anything in swimming. And we were away this summer holiday in Spain, and I did quite a lot of swimming, and I really get it. Like, I loved it. It's so nice because you can't listen to your thumpy music or some droney podcast or anything. You're just like, I'm sure there are devices where you probably could listen to music while you swim, but I've not got my hands on any of that yet. So I was just kind of with myself for like, you know, a couple of hours in the sea. Really nice stuff. That's good.
You've spoken about the kind of spiritual element of when you get to that place. And I was thinking about it because when you challenge yourself to that extent and you say, when you've said you go to that different place, you go to this spiritual, it's like you're kind of on a different level of consciousness. Are you connecting with your true self, like who you've always been, your true potential, your true purpose in those moments?
Well, I mean, it's a massive question. You know, I'm sure there are many people that could answer this better than I could. But yeah, I feel truly connected to myself when I'm depleted, tired, hungry, you know, in some form of pain. You know, I have on all accounts a really beautiful life that I'm really lucky as a person. So I don't even think it's sadistic to say that I do genuinely enjoy the pain. Like I like going through the turmoil of the challenge. I like the scale of it and not knowing how to complete it at times. It's a really good leveler, you know, for all kinds of things. Who was I talking to just recently about the, you know, the challenge is just one thing. It's the physicality of it and the mental strain that you're going to go through is one element of it. And then from a bird's eye view, you assess all kinds of things about yourself and your life and your privilege and whatever else you may have become accustomed to. Like in the desert, for example, you know, even little things like we didn't have a working toilet for over a month. You know, we didn't sit on a toilet for a month. You know, we didn't have a shower for a month. You know, we ate the same food, broadly speaking, for a month. You know, all of these things are not a big deal, but when you compound them over the course of a month, you get out of that having achieved something truly special, in my opinion. And you know, you go into the hotel. I just got like shivers there thinking about it. You go into the hotel and you have your piping hot shower and you sit on your lovely bed in your air-conditioned room and have a cocktail or whatever it might be. And it's just like the little things that are just so normal, right, all of a sudden feel like, oh my God, this is bliss. And these, you know, interesting and exciting challenges are just full of moments like that, moments of appreciation, moments of deep connection. We're of course raising awareness and money for James's Place, which is just the most beautiful male suicide prevention charity in the UK. And you know, their success rate is phenomenal. I was in there shooting content the other day and meeting some of the therapists, and essentially they're able to save the lives of almost everyone that comes to see them, which is remarkable. You know, I don't have any personal experience of being suicidal myself, but I would only assume that feeling lost and alone and unable to seek help must be a big factor in the decision to actually go ahead and take your own life, you know, like not knowing where to turn. And James's Place is, you know, a very good option of somewhere to turn. And, you know, we had an example of how they help these men and, you know, they help them over the course of weeks. You know, it's not just a single session. It's all completely free of charge. And it's just a really beautiful place. They saved over 2,000 people last year, which accounts for a pretty major percentage of the overall suicide number, you know. So they're doing just incredible work, and it's a real honor to be working with them. And of course, when, again, similar to the desert, when I'm in moments of extraordinary pain or you know, immense depletion, it will be very prominent in my thoughts that this is all for them, you know, to try to raise money and awareness for people whose lives are at such a turmoil. You know, they're in such a terrible state mentally that they're considering killing themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's such a shame. I always feel that, you know, people have talent that they're perhaps unaware of, not necessarily the grass is greener, but that more can be done with your life. So if you are ever at a stage where you feel just trapped and that you can't, you know, do anything or you're not good enough, that's just simply not true.
Yeah.
And this challenge and the previous challenge really are an attempt to showcase what a normal person can go out and do. Like, I'm not a triathlete. I'm not an Ironman.
Yeah.
I'm not even a professional athlete, just in passing. Like, I'm a normal guy that had, you know, a big drinking problem, who was kind of very lazy, actually, for you know, a big chunk of my life, where running 5K would have been really difficult. Like, I would never have gone and ran 5K in the park. That would have been like, hats off to me. I would have had 10 beers after running a 5K to celebrate, yeah. You know, like I've just run a 5K, you know, like that would have been huge for me a few years ago. And I think all I've done really, I ramble because I'm a podcaster.
No, all
I've done is removed that perception that this stuff isn't possible to me. I believe that I can do it. So I'm going to get out there and give it a go. And that's all really.
A couple of things on that. Number one, I think as we're following your journey with Project 7, I think it's so easy to look at you and think you've this huge platform, you've got loads of people supporting you, but literally every single donation matters. If you're listening to this and you're following Spencer on his journey, like even €5 is going to make a difference. The second thing is, obviously, with your upbringing, Spencer, you acknowledge your privilege and how easy life could have been for you, but you choose hard. And Wim Hof says that, you know, we wake up every day and it's so easy to choose easy. It's so easy to stay warm. It's so easy to stay in our comfort zone. So for anyone listening, what are the benefits of waking up and doing the hard thing?
For me, like, money and privilege aside, because people's, you know, circumstances will always be different. And I find it's almost, you know, you're shooting yourself in the foot if that's where you're starting with a comparison, you know, like, well, I grew up with this and you grew up with that. I think what I like to focus on is kind of, you know, your mindset and how you decide to push yourself. So to the point of doing hard things, for me, it all revolves around pride and that feeling of feeling proud of yourself, right? So I have come from, regardless of where I've come from in life, I have felt a deep shame in my adult life, right? Knowing that having that drink in the morning behind everyone's back is the wrong thing to do. Knowing that not doing anything all day and staying in bed and watching TV is the wrong thing to do. Like, and you live in this kind of, you don't even want to call your friends because you know that they're working. And it's kind of like, oh God, I have to wait until I've been a, for lack of a better word, a complete loser, right, in my adult life. And you know, you wouldn't necessarily know that about me, but I felt enormous amounts of shame. You know, I shouldn't be doing this, I shouldn't be feeling this way. And you know, despite my best efforts, even back in the day, I would take the easiest route to whatever. You know, I would cut corners and just be this chancer, essentially. And since changing that about myself and, you know, forcing myself to get up early and initially what feels like losing, going out in the rain, you know, covering those miles, getting out in the cold, getting on the bike, you know, getting in that cold tub, having a cold shower, just being awake and alive early in the morning. When you stack it up over time, you start to realize that you're really changing. You know, like the version of myself that I am now, compared with, you know, call it 5 to 10 years ago, is a completely different person. But there hasn't been huge, extraordinary leaps to get to you know, where I am today. And there's still plenty of room for improvement. Obviously, I'm, you know, nowhere near who I want to be, I suppose. But just little things and consistent change makes you wake up a different person, I think. And for me, it's all around pride. You know, if I can go out in the morning first thing and tackle, you know, a difficult run and get home and it's, you know, 8 a.m. and I've done my hard thing for the day, then you're immediately set up for success, right? It means little things like having that cookie or that piece of cake that you love in the afternoon doesn't really feel like you're cheating anymore. It's kind of like I deserve this because I've done the difficult thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, it's all of this is personal stuff. I also feel that your mental health is just so much clearer and better when you look after yourself. You know, if you look after your mind and your body, you are rewarded with just feelings of being, of feeling great. You know, like the times in my life where I've been the lowest and the most ashamed are when I am just completely disregarding my health, right? I'm eating shit. I'm not training. I'm not working out. You look in the mirror, you don't love what you see because you're not putting in the time and effort into yourself. It's almost like starting a business. If you start a business, you have ordinarily a plan for that business to get from A to B. And you look at it and you go, you know, this is how we're going to become a great business. And you implement certain things to get to a certain place. But people don't tend to do that with their own lives. And I think that's really strange. I remember I had a meeting with an incredible CEO years ago, just in a casual setting. And I had so much respect for this person just because of who they were. And I knew nothing about them, really. And he's the one that told me that. He was like, what's your... He said to... And it's a question that loads of people ask you, but he was like, what's your five-year plan? And I was like, for what? And he was like, for yourself. Like, where are you going to be in 5 years? And I was like, oh, I'm not sure. You know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And he was like, you have to be sure. He's like, you have to know exactly where you want to be in 5 years' time. And then you have to implement a bunch of things that will get you there. Yeah. Like, otherwise, 5 years is going to go past and you're going to be exactly where you were before. And you're going to say, oh, well, in 5 years' time, maybe this will happen. And he was like, you have to understand that in order to have this or be in a happy relationship with this or be in this position at work or like it all, you know, you have to do it. And it might mean just climbing a little step every day so that in 100 days or 300 days, you've climbed 300 steps. You're 300 steps higher than you were before. And it's kind of, I was just like, it just makes so much easy sense, but no one, not no one does it, but very few people do it, you know? So these days that go by where you don't drink alcohol and these days that go by where your whoop strain is high because you're pushing yourself, you know, it all adds up. And one day you're just going to wake up and be like, God, I'm really happy with who I am.
Oh, I love it. And so inspiring. And I spoke to Hal Elrod, who wrote Miracle Morning. And he said, so many of us expect to live like a 9 out of 10 life or a 10 out of 10 life. But our level of investment in ourselves and our personal development is a 2 or a 3. So if you're only putting 2 or 3 in, how do you expect to have a 9 or a 10 life? But Spencer, back to the challenge. And what do you think is going to be the most challenging part of it?
This is 7 different continents. So we're going all over the world. Some of the terrain and some of the climate will be similar, but you know, nothing will be the same. So we can't rinse and repeat anything. Mm. Yeah, every single set of circumstances is going to be its own challenge. I think we might be making some amendments to the route, but for example, until very recently, we were starting in Rio, then going to California, then going to London, then Dubai, Perth, Cape Town, Antarctica. So traveling to those places is going to be a head wreck, right? It's going to be really exhausting. I won't have the 3 kids with me, but we will have bikes, camera kit, people. You know, there's a crew of us going. So at no time is this traveling going to feel comfortable, easy. We're going to be stood in lines for hours and hours and hours. Like, wait until you see the kit that we'll be taking, right? Like, it's a whole camera crew with all the camera kit, bikes, like all the kit. It's going to be like a real mess traveling with this. We're not flying privately anywhere, obviously. You know, we're going to be in the back of the plane most of the time for budgetary reasons. You know, I would love to fly business 7 times and have a bed. I'm not going to have that unless any of the airlines are listening to this and they want to, you know, be kind and upgrade me. But it's kind of, it's going to be a mess. And in certain cases, say we were starting in Rio. That's my first ever Ironman. I remember my brother after his first Ironman. He was battered like for a while, and lots of people are like, they go and do an Ironman, they take 2 months off running types of, you know, their body is battered. I'll have a travel day and like half a day off basically. So we'll finish that. We'll get straight up to California. I hope to have, you know, a day of rest in California. Then I'm into the Sacramento Ironman, right, again. So on day three, I'll be faced with my second Ironman. Then, you know, all being well, we finish that. Bam, we're on a plane to London. Morning off, bam, we're into our... So you get where I'm going with it. Obviously, I don't need to kind of explain it, but it's an awful lot for the body to take. And then I think it's going to be unusual for the body to have to come back to life, essentially, because it's going to think at the end of some big, you know, 14-hour exercise, it's going to go, right, perfect, boom, everything's in the red, switch off, you know, rest, eat, sleep. And essentially, I'm not going to be giving that to my body. I'll have a beautiful big meal. I'll hopefully black out for 10, 11 hours at the end of each one. But, you know, we've got to go again and again and again seven times. It's just going to be a lot. And also, by the way, I don't know how I'm going to get on. It may be that, you know, you get to the end of the second Ironman and your body just goes, like, I'm violently opposed to this.
Mm.
But like, I think I'll be all right, because I'm never going to give up. So if I come off my bike and break my leg, then we'll have a problem. And sorry, in a really roundabout way to get to answer your question, which was what's going to be the hardest part. Antarctica is going to be the hardest part by miles.
So it's the water, is it?
General temperature, water, weather. It's that inability to get yourself out of trouble if you have to. So hypothermia is, of course, a very real issue. Not too long ago, I ran around my local track for 24 hours. I don't know if you know that, but I set off at 5 p.m. and stopped at 5 p.m. the following day and just ran laps of my local athletics track for 24 hours. That was sheer curiosity, by the way, because I know that there exists 24-hour runners in the world, and I was like, that's mad. Let's try it.
Listen to anything?
You'd be amazed how quickly the time passed, actually. Like, night was easily... Like, the thing I was the most worried about is, right, okay, I'll run for, say, 3-4 hours, and then it's going to get really dark, and then you're on your own, and the track's closed, and you know, you're just lapping all night, you know, from, call it 8 p.m. when it gets dark to 6:30 in the morning, you know, nearly 12 hours on the track, just in the dark. And I was just like, that's obviously going to be the roughest bit, because in the morning when people start arriving at the track and the sun comes up, you'll have that second, you know, boost of, yay, you know, people are here. But the night went really quite well. And there is a point to me going to this place, by the way. So at night, I was wearing this great big thick hoodie, and it over the course of 4 or 5 hours, it filled with sweat, basically, because I was perspiring a lot. And at some point, I was the other side of the track, and it was just, it's like I was wearing a wet, like soaking wet blanket, and it suddenly turned on me. Like I went from being probably too warm, you know, which was a really nice feeling, like being kind of curled up in a bed, to being freezing, and it suddenly gets you, like hypothermia. This is early onset hypothermia, but when hypothermia rears its head, and it has done quite a few times actually in challenges for me, usually at the end when like your body understands that it's the end, so it just goes, it just shuts down, and you get really cold, like even if you're somewhere really hot, right? Yeah. And this was not really hot; it was 0 degrees, and there was ice on the track, and I just got so cold, and you start doing all this kind of like, to your body starts going, doing whatever it can to generate heat. And so I'm stripping off my clothes, and it's 0 degrees, and I'm trying to get this wet stuff off me. And I kind of made my way into the entry hall of the thing, and lay down, and it was warm, thank God. Like, you know, I was running towards it thinking, like, if it's cold in there, I'm, well, fucked, basically. And it was nice and warm, had a few cup of soups. My delightful Briley, who manages my social media, who's had never seen anything like this, was running around. So we were like, do I get an ambulance? ambulance, you know, like she was just like completely beside herself, you know, frightened. And I was like, no, it's fine. Like I'll warm up and I'll get back out there. But my point is there, you've got a nice warm cup of soup, a kettle, yes, a room that's warm. So if that were to happen to you in Antarctica, you've got a tent. And in the tent is obviously freezing. So we'll have kit, obviously, but that process from going from, you know, oh, I'm almost too warm to Jesus Christ, I'm freezing, to having to warm up again will be more complicated in Antarctica. And obviously the swim, I'm going to spend an hour and a half in, you know, water that's -2 degrees. And it's kind of, I'm going to be in it for an hour and a half. So
Jesus.
So that's the rough thing. And that's the kind of like, you can't pull the ripcord once you're in. So once you're in, you're in. That's what I have these like daydreams about. When I'm like walking around, I have these feelings of, God, that's going to feel shit. Because it's going to be like, it's going to be really, really, really dark. Like you're not going to be able to see anything. So like when you look underwater, you know, when you go like swimming on holiday, you can see the floor. You're going to see zero. Like it'll be pitch black, freezing cold. And it's, yeah, that's gonna suck. There are leopard seals there as well, and they're really dangerous. So we're currently trying to figure out a way to keep leopard seals away from me when I'm swimming. I think the reality of being attacked by a leopard seal is I think I'm safer probably than not. But it's not to be ruled out. They're like ballerinas, these things, in the water. They're incredible swimmers, as you might imagine. And I think, and some of them are like 800 kilos. They're 600 to 800 kilos. So one of these things gets hold of you, there's literally nothing you could do about it. And they savage penguins like all day long for fun. And obviously, I'll probably look a bit like a penguin. So I'm trying to see if I can get a wetsuit that isn't black. Because that would, I mean, I can't think of a worse way to go, to be honest, than to be dragged underwater by one of these things. So I'd prefer to avoid them at all costs. So the reason we might be pushing it by a week or two is because we need a permit to swim in the natural lakes that are on land, which obviously you can see stuff coming towards you. So, you know, we can protect ourselves a bit better. So yeah, we're just working through a few final bits.
And was Jamie able to tell you anything that helped, or is it just people, is anyone able to give you any sort of advice that helps, or is it just the support that means a lot to you?
No, I mean, I don't think Jamie's in a position to help me athletically. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, you know, I think the never giving up advice is nice. I think, you know, we're not going to undertake any kind of dangerous activity that actually has, you know, a good chance of very serious injury or death. You know, the kind of chances that I'm talking about are still pretty slim. We're just trying to minimize those further. I think that, yeah, I mean, nobody has ever attempted something like this in the time frame that we are looking to do it in. So, again, there's nobody that could advise me. But it's the same with the desert. You know, we were the first to run 30 consecutive marathons on sand. So, you know, obviously I can chat to incredible marathon runners and they can tell me bits and bobs. But I think my experience from that will be really relevant. And, you know, I think it's fine. I feel like a very resilient person, to be honest. You know, we'll stick with it and we'll understand that the cause is great. And, you know, also I would really love I just looked down at a picture of my daughter. I'd really love my children to kind of grow up in a world where they feel that things are possible. Mm. I think as a kid, you get a lot of people telling you can't do certain things. You know, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I think it's normal as a kid to assume that you can do anything. And that's kind of squeezed out of children, you know, as they grow older. And I will always try and encourage my kids to think in ways where they can go and do anything. And I think this is just a nice physical example of that.
A short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. This week, I'm using Pro Age, part of the Advanced Care Body Wash range, with gentle moisturisers, antioxidants, and ingredients like olive oil and vitamin B3. I absolutely love it. It's also free from sulfates, has biodegradable ingredients, and is packaged in recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to dry skin this season and step out feeling more beautiful and confident in your own skin with thanks to Dove Advanced Care Body Wash.
I went for a walk yesterday evening and I was just thinking about this interview and I wrote something down and I was like, is Spencer the most... I wrote it down, sorry. Are you the strongest person you know, mentally?
It's a good question because it's hard to answer, isn't it? I hope I don't sound arrogant or kind of overly confident, but yeah, I do think that I've got a pretty good mind for this style of challenge. Am I the strongest person I know? I mean, I'm pretty fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of strong people. I think I genuinely believe my wife is a strong person, perhaps not in the same ways that I am strong. You know, like obviously we're different people. My father is a strong man. My brother is a strong man. My mother is a strong woman. You know, I'm really lucky to come from a family of strong people. You know, like we are all a kind of no nonsense. That doesn't matter. You know, that's bullshit. Crack on. Style of family, which I'm really happy about, by the way. I saw I saw a Wall Street Journal article yesterday, and I just thought it was so refreshing. It was about parenting styles and how my PR will probably kill me for saying this, but I'll say it anyway. There was a Wall Street Journal article about parenting styles, and what is that famous phrase? It's the like. Bleep me out because I don't want to swear in the podcast, okay. But it's called "Fuck around and try me" or something, or "Fuck around and find out," right?
Okay. Yeah.
And it's that it was basically saying that style of parenting is coming back. That like you can behave however you want to behave, but there'll be consequences. So like, do the thing that I'm telling you not to do, but you'll be punished. Type thing. It was calling it a movement back towards that style of parenting where, like, you know, children and their feelings don't rule the roost, right? Yeah. Because, of course, kids have, like, big, wild feelings. And, you know, there certainly has been a shift towards parents, you know, allowing their children to feel however they want. And it's kind of like, I've always thought that that was a little bit odd because children should look to parents for guidance. And if you're a good parent, you're not always going to be in favor with your children because you have to teach your children difficult things and make them feel, you know, that they can't just have whatever they want whenever they feel like it. You know, that's an important part of growing up. And I had that for my whole childhood, you know, and I think if I'm touching back on the previous points of privilege and stuff, of course I've always had a nice life, but as a kid, I don't think you ever place value in the property or whatever that might be. You know, you don't really understand stuff like that. There was always just firm lessons from my dad in particular. There was kind of like, you can have this if you do that. Right. It wasn't a case of like, you can just have things. And you know, it's just a normal way of being brought up. My dad's a northern guy, quite firm with us. You know, crying wasn't really accepted and was perceived to be weak. And I'm not suggesting that that is nice and normal, but that's certainly the way we were brought up. You know, fix the problem. Don't cry about the problem. You know, that's the house we grew up in. And I have to say that as an adult now, I'm really happy that that's the way that I was brought up. And, you know, when my daughter comes to me crying with a problem, I'll shower her with love and affection and help her. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that people need to be nasty to their children, but I think an element of, you know, wallowing in misery or wallowing in pain, you know, isn't going to help you. So, try to step above it and fix yourself. I'm really grateful for the way in which I was brought up, to be honest. There's very little that gets me down, you know, and pins me down. And I have general feelings that that's possible or I can do that because, you know, I know the interview's coming to an end, but, you know, I lost my brother when I was a kid. He was a 22-year-old who climbed Mount Everest, you know, like 22-year-olds who climbed Mount Everest. You know, it's kind of, I don't know any 22-year-olds that are climbing Mount Everest. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's kind of like he just had, and obviously, you know, in this particular instance, it killed him. You know, a lot of circumstances around that were very unfortunate, but he just had this big, wild, adventurous spirit. And my other brother is similar in nature. You know, he likes to bite off big things and go and do cool things. I've always just grown up with inspiring people in my own family, and I'm really grateful for that.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And it's your brother is your northern star almost guiding you. And you obviously connect with him on those deeper challenges that you do.
Yeah, I love that. I did a LinkedIn post. I love LinkedIn. Do you like LinkedIn? I love LinkedIn. I don't spend any time on Instagram or TikTok or anything. I'm on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is so positive and professional and cool, and I just love it. So
like, I feel like LinkedIn is like I walk into a room and everyone ignores me. Like I'm like, hello.
Oh, what? Because you post something and it just goes nowhere. Yeah, yeah. No, my posts are like the flattest things ever as well. Like I'm trying to creep into LinkedIn at the moment. But I do love it. Like I find LinkedIn a very positive place. And I really enjoy a lot of the posts on LinkedIn. I can't remember why LinkedIn came up. You said something and then I spoke about LinkedIn.
We were talking about
my brother.
Yeah.
I did a LinkedIn post about loss the other day and how obviously, you know, people should manage grief and pain however they see fit. Like there's no judgment here, but I feel quite lucky that my brother's death essentially drives me in many ways now. Yeah. Like I have these feelings of wanting to make him proud of me. I want to live the life that he would have wanted. You know, I want to use him for positive drive. You know, when things are really rough, I imagine what it must have been like for him to die at that age on Everest, knowing that he's never going to see us again in those final moments, and how sad and tragic that is, and how important it is for me to carry on, you know. And just like, I don't know, I feel him with me when I'm up against it. You know, when times are rough, like in Antarctica, when I'm in a huddled, you know, bent double in some tent and there's a minus 25 blizzard outside and I feel freezing cold and my hands are numb and I've got, you know, another 90K of cycling and a full marathon to run, I will think of him, you know, and what he went through and how proud he will be of me if I pull it off and how much that would mean to you know, him if he were alive.
And I think for grief, for so many people that, and you're totally entitled to do this for a time, like if someone you love dies, you feel like you're lying down and you're dying too. But to actually turn your pain into purpose is incredible and do all the things. It was such a beautiful way to put it, Spencer. Thanks for that insight. So will you just tell me a little bit about Vogue and will she be okay when you go off and do this? Or do you have those deeper conversations, or is it kind of you just don't talk about it?
I think she is pretty confident after what happened in the desert that, you know, I'm pretty capable. She, when the desert first came around, she said, well, you can't do that. It'll kill you, were her exact words. And I said, why do you think it will kill me? And she was like, well, like you can't run 30 marathons in a row in the desert. Like nobody's done that. It'll kill you. And I said, but it won't kill me. Like I'll do it. It'll be fine. And I think there was a change in the way she sees what I see kind of during that. We would talk whenever there was Wi-Fi, which wasn't as regularly as I would have loved, but it was, in certain camps, you could climb up these rocks and there would be like some service at the top of the rock. So we'd be like, we'd run a marathon and then like go on these quite risky climbs, basically, to like, and like we were kind of like, is there reception up there? And like, you know, Johnny, who's a really good climber, would already be up there. He's like, there's two bars. So like, you'd be risking the climb to kind of be able to FaceTime the kids and Vogue. And I think she saw the camaraderie and how, you know, we had a great time in the desert. Like, you know, we had a lot of that, people messaging us going like, it just looks like you're having a good time. It's like, we are having a good time. Like, I'm prepared and we're having an amazing time. You know, this is what like a good plan being well executed looks like, you know, being bent over double with tape all over your knees, you know, screaming, crying every day signifies a lack of preparation, yeah, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we minimized risk, we controlled everything that we could control, and as a result, things were great. And we hope to do the same thing this time. You know, I think I said previously that good preparation is the antithesis of jeopardy. In an ideal world, we would have absolutely no jeopardy. We'd go out there and just absolutely smash it and come home, and that'd be great. But I would have thought there probably will be some jeopardy this time around. Vogue kind of knew, you know, relatively early on in that challenge that I would probably complete it. And I think she takes my word for the security of the stuff. I think, you know, we, like, at the end of the day, not looking to blow our own horn here, but like, we do a good job, you know, like, it's logistically really well planned. The team is great. You know, I'll have regular physio. We'll prevent niggles turning into injuries. We won't take any stupid risks, you know, like, so we're going to be on top of this in an incredibly professional way.
If you could go back in time to yourself at any point in your life and say something, at what point would you go back to and what would you say?
I'd love to go back. I remember vividly when Mike died. I'd love to go back then to my parents and tell them that everything's going to be okay. You know, because there was a, you know, as you might expect, when the news was fresh, it was awful, right? As a 10-year-old, I remember seeing my parents just, you know, with just completely lifeless shells of themselves. And it was quite scary for a 10-year-old. I never really understood the death. I thought it was, I didn't believe it for a start. I just thought, well, he'll come back, obviously. Because it was described to me that he was lost on the mountain, not that he was dead. So I thought, well, you know, so what type thing? Like, a 10-year-old doesn't really understand the gravity of that situation. I would, it's always a difficult question, this, like, rewriting the past, because the past is why we're here now, isn't it? So, like, you know, I probably wouldn't be who I am now if I hadn't abused alcohol for so many years. Of course, I'd love to go back to when I first really lost control of, you know, bad habits and alcohol, and just give myself a reality check and understand, you know, just not do that. But had I not done that, you know, I could be someone completely different today, and I certainly wouldn't have my business, and I probably wouldn't have done my 30 marathons, because I would have never felt the point, you know, that I would have never felt like there was any need to reinvent myself or push myself really far. So, you know, but in reality, I think it all adds up to interesting life experience. One of the most fascinating people I've ever met in my life is a really good friend of mine called Tucker Hall. And he created Volcom, the brand. He was the founder of Volcom. It's like a surfing, snowboarding brand. It's now worth an absolute fortune. And they bought him out really early because he was a real head wrecker. And his life experience and what he can share with you in a conversation is just so, like, it's so cool and interesting, right? All of the things that he's done and the ways that it's happened, and just like how his life has gone from here to here. He's now sober, completely sober. He lives in a wood cabin in Idaho and teaches AA meetings, and he's just like this coolest guy you've ever met, hands down. You meet him, right? It's just like straight away, he's super interesting. He wouldn't be the person that he is today if he hadn't abused drugs and alcohol on a daily basis for years and years and years. You know, so it's all part of a bigger picture. I think if I could have had a greater understanding of just how harmful alcohol is, or you know, I actually had no idea of the damage I was doing to myself. I thought it was just fun, in inverted commas. But now it's more, I see it more as a kind of, what doesn't make the boat go forward should just be chucked out the boat. You know, who was it that said that? Somebody told me that the other day.
It was on my podcast. Ben Hunt Davis.
But it's just really, it's really interesting that. And I live in that way. It's kind of like, you know, oh, like we're stood at this thing and will I have a cigarette? Like, is the cigarette going to benefit me in any way, or is it going to make my run tomorrow better? No, probably not. Okay, well, let's just not have the cigarette. It's kind of like, it's a nice and easy way just to, and by the way, I'm not saying you need to live like some monk and never drink or never smoke or whatever, like do the things that you want to do. But for me, I'd certainly lost sight of what was healthy. I was just drinking.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, on a daily basis, like unit after unit after unit after, it's just so bad for you. So,
mindless.
Yeah.
And exactly what Ben Hunt Davis says, every decision you make, it's either going to help your boat go faster or slow your boat down. And you've certainly, over the last few years, have put so much into making your boat go faster. You were talking about that guy in the wood cabin and people are so interested in what he's saying. You are that for people now. People still talk to me about the podcast we recorded because you meet people where they are. Any ability, you give the everyday person the motivation and the and empower them to make small changes. It doesn't have to be Project 7. It can be a run around the block outside your house. But you do that for people, Spencer. So thank you so much. And we are all rooting for you and cheering you every single step of the way.
Oh, thanks so much, mate. That's really kind. He always had a profound impact on me, that guy. So for you to say that to me is really kind of you.
Oh, thanks, Spencer. Good luck.
Cheers, mate.
Such a great conversation with Spencer. Really appreciate his time. You know, we'd 40 minutes in for this podcast. And the first thing he said when he logged on was, let this go as long as you want. I want it to be great. And that's the type of guy he is. He shows up, he gives things 100%, and he is so generous with his time. So a huge thank you to Spencer. You know what? I think he'd really appreciate a message of good luck today. So I'm going to link his Instagram in the show notes. Please head over if you have time and send Spencer a little message today. I'm sure he would absolutely love to hear from you. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you got lots of inspiration and motivation from this podcast. As I said, if you want to join us on the September reset, there's hundreds of us doing this 10-day challenge. It's my favorite one yet. You can sign up in the show notes. Straight away, you'll get all the details. And the best thing is, the September reset takes 10 minutes a day. That's all you have to do, show up for 10 minutes, and it's going to make a huge difference to the rest of your year. Our Christmas show is nearly sold out. We've gone to low availability. Those tickets are going to go fast now that we're into September. There's a link too in the show notes for that. And thank you to you for showing up today. I hope that whatever you do for the rest of the day, you have a little pep in your step after listening to this podcast. I appreciate every single one of you. Thank you so much for all the feedback and all the love always. I promise you, it goes a long way. See you next week.